If your idea of heaven is floating motionless on a tiny park bench over a small pond, then we have the movie for you. We saw Made in Heaven, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How to Discrepate. Gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Could you know you wonder how to discrepate? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made. I am Tall John Shear, a.k.a. Paul Shear, and this is a podcast where we talk about movies that are so bad but so good. And today is really a new favorite for me. The movie is called Made in Heaven, starring Timothy Hutton and Kelly McGillis. And it is about a person who dies, goes to heaven, falls in love, and then when the person he falls in love with goes back to Earth as a baby, bargains with a young old man. Yes, you heard that right. We'll get into all of this to go back and find her, but he only has 30 years, which really isn't a ticking clock that is installed much until the very end of the movie to find her and find true love. And that's basically the premise, but we have so much to talk about, and I can't do it without my two co-hosts. Please welcome Jason Manzoukas and June Diane Raphael. How are you both?
I mean, I'm going to just straight away say I do not agree with like your declaration at the beginning that this was one of the greats.
Oh, I think it's one of the greats.
Oh my God.
I think this is one of the most... There are so many things right and wrong with this movie that I'm really loving.
I'd love to hear some
it.
Of the right things.
Oh,
I'd
I love it.
To hear that.
I mean, June, can we talk about how I just found you in the house?
June has only been exhaling. June appears to be doing like the breathing that you do before a panic attack.
I walked into the house because June watched this morning. I watched it last night. And I
just
said,
finished
hey.
It about 10 minutes
oh,
ago.
Okay.
And I said, I said, June, and I look up and I see June, there it is, full on crying.
Wow.
Tears. You are crying right now, right?
These are real tears. This is not for the show.
This movie really got me good.
What? Oh my God. And I want to be clear. I also cry. I also yeah, cried.
Me too.
Oh my God.
How
me
could
too.
You not?
It's a
beautiful
not,
movie.
I'm not
it's
trying to
crazy.
Say that it does it. This, there's stuff in here that made me cry. The end made me cry. And the other thing that made me cry, the thing that really made me cry was when
saw
Tim,
his parents?
Yes, his birth parents, his original parents,
yeah,
pick the reincarnated him up, and they don't know that they have this relationship. That was devastating, I thought, and that was the best part of the movie for me.
There are so many, again, I think there are so many great things in here. I want to just give the floor to June for a second to be like, where are you at?
I don't know what's going on with me, but this movie hit in a particular way. And there was something about soulmates and something about, you know, maybe not finding your soulmate and what would happen if you didn't find your soulmate. And it just really, it really hit me. And this idea that we, you know, get to be reunited and live these many lives and meet people again. It just was really too much for me today. It was really a lot. I loved this movie. I mean, I don't know what I just watched, but all I know is it took me on an emotional roller coaster ride.
Wow. I'm going to make a very
yeah,
big
did.
Declaration and say that, in my opinion, Defending Your Life has, I think, one of the best interesting representations of heaven. I've always really looked to that in a really, they did it really well there. I think this movie is a very close second in some things. Like, I feel like there's, I have a lot to say, but there is something about what they're doing here that I kind of really liked. I have a million questions that I want to get into it all, but I want to just start off with what June said. The movie opens with this title card where it says,
I forgot about that.
This could be true. You could even know these people.
Okay.
And And I was thinking, like, is this a threat? Is this immediately a threat to us? Because we don't know what the movie is about. But as it becomes apparent, are we supposed to look at the person that we're with and going, do they really love me? Are they just settling for me? Am I just the commercial director in this Kelly McGillis's life? Or am I just the dad with garters throwing the piano out the shanty's doors? I mean, because it really is a damning thing. It's like there is someone for you. And if you don't find it, you will be eternally unhappy. I mean, it's
well,
dark,
let me ask
right?
you this. Do you feel like that's the case for everybody? Or do you feel like that is just, we're just, this is their story. Theirs is a story that is literally made in heaven. You know, she has never. So, again, like this, I'm like, this is an unprecedented reaction that you guys, that both of you have had. This reaction is so interesting to me. And while I don't disagree, there's some very interesting stuff here. The movie is ultimately unsuccessful for me.
100%.
In a way that is pretty nuts.
I mean, right from the get-go, the black and white.
The black and white, yes.
I mean, what are we doing here? That looks like I put a filter on my iPhone. It's like there's nothing. First of all, are they in period costumes? It feels like they're in 80s wardrobe and hair.
It was like, well, it's like the 80s obsession with the 50s, but it is the 50s or the 40s. I'm not. No. Because it's got to be the 50s because he's a vet, right? Because he was in the war. Yeah. Right.
Yes.
So it's somewhere in there. It starts in black and white. And
they're watching a black and white movie, which
yes, they're also watching Notorious, yes,
which is also kind of diluted by this filter that they put on. Because I feel like there was a moment where they're like, "Can we just shoot it and let's just shoot it in color?" And then they went back.
I bet they shot the movie in color and then they just graded the first act in black and white, or not even the whole first act.
Because I wrote down, I said, "Is the period black and white?" Because there wasn't. A lot, like there are moments where it's like, is this the 50s? Is this the 40s? I don't. There was nothing that was really calling out to me.
The cars were telling you a lot. And then when they die, sorry. So Tim Hutton is, you know, he's with Mayor Winningham, and she says to him, it's like that kind of Happy Days-esque kind of like vibes. And she says she's gonna marry the other guy, and so he's gonna drive to California. He starts to drive. He gets 100 miles from home. He sees a car accident. He saves a farting dog. Yeah, he saves a woman and her children from drowning, but then he himself drowns.
How did he drown? Because here's the thing. Okay. You have that old-time Model T car sinking down in the marsh. And I'm sorry, June, that we are unpacking this movie while you are still emotionally taking it in. The car is sinking into the marsh and the front window is open. He decides he's going to swim in the front window and then push the kid out.
No, out
and
the then, back. He's
out
in the
back.
He's
oh,
in
out,
the
at
back.
Back.
The back. It's front yeah. end going down. So he goes in the back and pushes everybody out the back door.
But why was he drowning? He had a full window open.
I mean, who knows what happened, babe? I thought maybe his foot got caught in some marsh.
Maybe he
or,
got, yeah, who knows?
You know, who knows? Because the mom was also struggling in that front seat.
Yeah.
So I don't know if the weight of it just took him down and he was still.
So you're saying it's
times.
His fault. You're
I was.
Just,
I was
blaming him.
I was like, just get the fuck out of there, man.
Attacking the hero in this situation.
You're jumping in. You're going to be a hero. You're saving these people.
I think he tried, Paul. I mean,
I don't know. He seemed like he had a clear path. He got like a whole family out. Just whoop, 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 whoop. Like, he didn't even look like it was that deep. It wasn't like raging waters.
Wow. I mean, this is a take. This is a hot take.
This is a take.
To blame the hero.
There's so many things I loved about this movie.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to just dive in. Okay, so, and yes, this movie did personally affect me. And I did feel like it made me really, well, I guess it depends whether you believe in soulmates or not. I do believe in soulmates and I do believe I found my soulmate, but it's very scary to think of how you could have missed your soulmate, and that's terrifying. And so that definitely hit me. And then
I do have I want to say something about this because it's the only time I'll be able to say this. I'm also obsessed with that idea of who you meet and when you date them. Like, I would love, and there's no way to make this even possible, but to see where you and I or you and whoever you're with crossed paths but like you weren't.
Yes.
Like I love that idea that you might have been in the same room. You might have been in the same mall. You might have been in the same.
We know we did. We know we probably did cross paths because I found out many years later that Paul used to go to Puck Fair where I was waitressing and I never knew he was there. And that was at the exact same time.
Yeah.
Anyway, that really hit me hard. And then also, I absolutely loved the portrayal of this woman who is a new soul, who gets to be an artist and who approaches the world in this childlike, positive way. And I just, and writes and paints and is this like lovely childlike artist. Yeah. Who's looking for love. I absolutely loved her character and loved seeing like this grown female artist whose work is actually inspiring this drifter. And it's a part of how they're so connected together. I thought that was beautiful.
Wait, you think, her book.
Her book.
Hmm. Yeah. I really liked, yes, I loved that as well. And I loved that her book was such a kind of companion of his.
Right.
You know? But what I also loved was that he was nonetheless, you know, so much of what was, I feel like a lot of what informed her in a wonderful way was she gets born into this family that is like toy makers. Like her father is all about joy and making people laugh.
Well,
you know,
upon the
death of her mother, you know, he says, you know, toys that make you laugh. Or isn't that what he says?
It was crazy.
Exactly what he
literally is visiting. Like, it looks like the mom
grave.
Is fresh in the
at
ground.
The grave. He's like,
fresh
he has a Shark
in.
Tank idea at the
goes,
grave.
And by the way, it's not even a Shark Tank idea because he just comes back.
He's like sharks, let me tell you, I was standing outside my wife's grave and I had a thought. And let me know if you've ever had this thought. Toys that make you laugh.
Toys that make you laugh isn't even an idea, like ultimately, because it's not like he invented the idea of toys, right? So toys serious? But I don't even get into that. All I'll say is this. If someone who just buried their wife comes back and says to their child, I have a new invention. I'm in my military. I would say, oh, we got to get Marcus. We got to get him some help.
Some like therapy.
Marcus is,
we got, you
yeah,
need
Marcus
to grieve.
Is off the rails.
You
right
need
now.
To grieve right now.
Yeah,
you
the
can't.
Soldier who wants to create the toys that make people, let's get him. Maybe not put him alone with the kid tonight.
She
maybe
died. She died, Tom. She died. No. Toys that make you laugh. Toys that make you laugh.
By the way, I did think that they missed a giant opportunity when Kelly McGillis gets married and like he wasn't like he didn't have like a whoopee cushion or a hand buzzer. Like I felt like everybody at that party should have had, some sort of a laughing
sort of toy. But I really liked that, you know, she's grows up inside of this kind of successful, joy-filled toy kind of life. But she's inspiring, you know, when Timothy Hutton chooses, he dies, he goes to heaven. There's a lengthy, the first half of Act Two takes place in heaven. And
I need to talk about Act Two for a long time.
Berserk.
Heaven here is like an insane
about
asylum.
There's about 12 movies within this movie.
I want to live in the heaven
like
world.
It's like experiencing 12 different movies at once.
Kelly McGillis, who is, I really liked seeing her again. I feel like I haven't seen her.
Love her.
She's so great.
I've watched Top Gun twice during the pandemic.
I gotta rewatch that.
Did you watch the Val Kilmer documentary?
Yes.
Okay. So I watched it right after that.
Okay.
Which was really fun.
Yes. Okay. There's something about like Kelly McGillis in heaven because they're trying to show off this heaven, and the heaven alternates between an insane asylum. It looks like, okay, this is an old fashioned insane asylum. Then it kind of feels like, oh, is this like a Rushmore set? Like I felt like Max from Rushmore is doing like the set from Ghostbusters. Like when
it also
Emmett
sometimes
walked.
Feels like it's like a Lars von Trier movie. Like that it's just a facade on a black box stage.
Well, there is
so
literally
much
moments
fog.
Like that.
There's so much fog in heaven. And so many. Here's the other thing that I want to say, because you brought it up, Paul, earlier, which is you brought up defending your life.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I was going to reference was there's a lot of The Good Place in this. There's a lot of the afterlife where they don't swear. They use different, where she says, the Emmett rather says frock instead of fuck a couple of times, where there's a bunch of Good Place-esque kind of treatments of the afterlife. You know, the idea that like you get to go to school and continue to learn and continue to grow and continue to have a life, like a life that is lived inside of heaven has like all of the components of
Earth. I wrote down, there's a lot of bullshit going on in heaven. Like they're trying to get married and then that guy who was the principal and Back to the Future is like, I'm going to go deliver these invitations. I'm like, oh, God, in heaven, I got to do errands now, too? Can't I just be dead?
Oh, I felt that way about the kids in school. I was like, if I'm a kid and I die, I'm fucking pissed that I have to go to school in heaven.
Okay, what about the kids who are instruments? What are they?
Yes. All right,
so they can have a band at their wedding. And look, of course, there's certain things you can and cannot do in a movie. But like you would imagine, like, oh, let's get like, you know, one of the best musicians of all time because it's heaven and they can all be there. No, they have a choir of young boys who don't sing. They are literal instruments. So they open up their mouth and it's like,
it's like an orchestra. They can sing the elements of an orchestra, essentially. It is.
So I was trying to understand the rules of heaven.
Yes.
So essentially, if you're born there, you're definitely, if you're a new soul that's been born there by your dead parents who are now in heaven, you're going to go back.
Well, everyone goes back.
I believe everybody goes back.
But when is a question mark?
Everyone
because
goes
that
back,
guy
right?
who was.
It might be 7 minutes. It might be 7 months. It might be 70 years.
Quick question, though. It seemed like heaven was themed to be in the 40s or 30s, and I thought they were doing that for Timothy Hutton's character. Is that just a choice?
Well, they also, no, because they also had, like, the guy who had a room of computers, you know?
But all those kids were, like, from Little House on the Prairie kind of kids.
And Tim Hutton was like, what's this?
Yeah, he never saw those computers. Yeah.
So, like, exactly. So, like, I think heaven is trying to include all of time. You know what I mean?
Okay, so it's timeless.
You know, I think so.
But that old guy who came over with the fedora is like, hey, let's go have some beers in a little bit. I'm like, oh, wow, okay, this is...
But, like, his dead aunt didn't feel like someone from, like, the teens
no,
or
she
the
felt
20s.
Like somebody from the 80s.
She felt like somebody from the 80s who was, like, you know, an 80s aunt who paints in her house. You know, so, like, they're not very good at establishing... The rules were very hard to follow.
The rules are basically they can travel, like, a character in Half-Life through these portals or whatever it is. Like, but my question to you, or to answer you, June, is you can... This is what is weird about heaven. You can fuck, you can have kids, and then you can have souls. So are all new souls being created by angels fucking?
No, or people on Earth.
Oh, no.
On Earth. Like, you create a new soul if you create a child on Earth as well. It's just... That soul.
No, that's not necessarily Jason, because lots of those babies.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Heavenly
yes.
souls.
Correct, yes.
You know?
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, so I think the brand new souls, I think Paul's right.
Oh, so we're only
born
generating
out of like.
Angel fucking?
Angel fucking.
and then, so essentially the angels fucking, will they have to let their
kid
disappear?
I can tell you right now. I can tell you right now. I guess then we were all at one point born from angels.
Well, that's what I'm asking. That's, I guess, what I'm trying to figure out is,
we're all just angels. We are all just.
None of us are our parents' children.
Definitely not.
You know
well, because,
what I mean?
Because,
definitely
well, here's
not.
The thing. We are definitely not our parents' children because we look like Timothy Hutton. And to get to that scene that you talked about, Jason, it was a great scene where his parents pick
up... His original parents.
His original
parents.
The people
that lost him when he drowned. Parents.
Right, pick up the reincarnated Timothy Hutton. He doesn't just feel like Timothy Hutton. He looks exactly like Timothy Hutton, right? Is that where we're... Or are we... Or is this a conceit? Is this like a quantum leap thing?
I think this is a conceit of the movie. Yeah,
okay.
I don't think he looks... Exactly like this.
Okay.
I mean, I think he's, but I definitely think he reminds them of their son.
Like, so Timothy Hutton, probably he has more fringes when he's reincarnated. So that's the difference, right? He has
more fringes on his jacket.
More fringes on his jacket.
They've aged, you know, they've aged, but he hasn't, you know, so like he's around the same age now that he was when they lost him too. So I think they're just using that to say like he reminds them of their lost son, not that it is, so eerie. So that we are seeing. They're not saying, "Oh no, it's you." They, you know, like I don't think they feel that. I think they're just feeling. Yeah. In a wonderful way, some sense of like connection and closure on it. In a way,
I mean,
like,
it was that was a beautiful scene, and I love that dad who has been in everything with the big mustache.
Yeah, I loved that sequence especially. That's the sequence that really made me cry. Was the parents? Was the parents scene?
Yeah, it was beautiful.
I thought it was really beautiful and really well done when the mom tells him that she's sick and she hasn't told the husband, and then you cut to the back seat and the husband is pretending to be asleep, and I just thought it was great. Really. Very good, very sad. That was really lovely.
It was lovely, and then the son comforting her and telling her it's not going to be scary. Mm-hmm. It was just so beautiful.
Now you're gonna make me cry.
And her also feeling like that when she retold that story about, you know, setting a place for him and then feeling like he was okay. You know, it was just beautiful.
But this is where the movie is confusing because. There at points he feels like he remembers that he is from heaven. And like, so is that deja vu? Is this movie saying deja vu is our remembrances of heaven? Because there's a moment where the principal from Back to the Future says, you got to catch us up on everything going on Earth. But then they seem to be interfering in Earth willy nilly, like the paintings in the window. Emmett's out on the street smoking cigarettes.
There is one line where they talk about how certain things, certain like technology or inventions have been made in heaven and then they are brought back to Earth. So like, for example, that painting could have been made by Aunt Lisa reincarnated.
So basically like, okay, because I guess what you're saying, like I was taking it like, she created that and then imprinted it like Jacob in Twilight onto somebody else.
No.
Okay.
No, that could be her. Like she could be walking around.
Okay, because she could be back. Well, here's the question then. I got a lot of questions about heaven. So is Santa in heaven? Because Mario, the
Santa
toy
Claus?
Maker. Well, yes, Santa Claus. Mr. Sandy Claus. Is Santa in heaven? Because Mario, the toy maker, which seems to be who Kelly McGillis works for, he is inventing wind-up toys and everything. Oh, look at my newest invention. And he's showing her a wind-up toy. And I'm like, okay, so why do we need a toy manufacturer in heaven? Mm. Where? What is that doing? And I guess to your point, June, does that mean that like, is Mario just biding his time until he comes back and then brings back wind-up toys? Because it feels like as every day goes forward, we're getting past wind-up toys. Like, he should be on, like, Nintendo's at this point. Like, by the time he comes back, he needs to be, yeah.
I agree in the sense that I'm not sure what that heaven-based toy industry is.
Yes.
I don't know if that's somehow finding its way back to Earth, or if these are toys for people to play with in heaven. Perhaps, you know, I'm not sure, but you're right in the sense that I feel like the movie is trying to establish some sort of link between heaven and the real world that is a little bit more, you know, amorphous, so that people and ideas and even items can kind of be seen in both places. But it's like it's a lot of it feels contrived or convenient for the characters to have an emotional beat or a moment or an epiphany or et cetera.
It's weird that she works for Mario, the toy maker, and then is birthed to a father who makes funny toys. Like, and then she becomes a toy maker too. But it's not like she becomes, like, I guess in my mind, she should work for Mario the toy maker. And then because of her mom dying, she creates toys. But she doesn't even create toys. She becomes an author who doesn't like creating toys. So I'm also like, wait, what's your trajectory? The same way like that the guy from Wings is like, I want to be a director. Like the guy from Wings that she marries later on, I know I'm jumping around, is like, he says to her, he has a monologue with her at one point where he says,
I can't keep up with you.
You have such an imagination. And the first time we meet him, he's I want to direct movies. I have these big ideas. It's like, wait, so hold on. You have two creative people saying like if he was an accountant, I would buy that story.
Babe, but he wanted to do like French cinema, and he ended up directing like dog food commercials, you know, where she stayed true to her like artistic ideals. That's the difference.
Yeah. Well, no, I think he felt like, you know, her kind of success and drive and belief in herself, her confidence, I think made him feel insecure because insecure because he was staying as a ad man. And, you know, in the third act, when they run into each other at the department store and he is now married to like a child bride.
Yeah.
He's like, I just want a Clio and another, you know, another advertising Clio award for some dog food thing or whatever he says, you know?
Yeah. Well, but that's because he won't shoot dog food on video. He knows that dog food needs to be shot on film.
I did laugh really hard when there's one scene when their marriage is starting to fall apart where the shot is of her riding her bicycle into the apartment with like a newsie cap on. Do you know what I'm talking about?
There's a lot of weird stuff like that.
I laughed out loud. Yeah, just like not jumping off the bike to like sort of wheel it in and place it where it's supposed to be, but just fully like riding through her apartment.
This is like old school 80s bullshit. Like we were talking about this. People living on houseboats, people wearing newsie caps.
Yes.
It's all like, I feel like the Coen brothers did an amazing job of like encapsulating all of that in like Julianne Moore's character in Big Lebowski. It's like, I'm an artist. It's like all the weird affectations, but yet she's so not like that. But yet I wear a newsie cap. I do this. I like Kelly McGillis, but they definitely were pushing her in a lot of different directions where I feel like I didn't know where she found her passion, and is her passion only in finding love? I don't know.
Well, what was very clear to me was like, or it was very clear to me, maybe because his trajectory was much different. Kelly McGillis's character was having true success in her life, and she had a good relationship with her father. She was,
never told him that she loved him.
I didn't tell him that I loved him, how much I loved him, or whatever.
Just how much? Yeah. Okay,
they're pretty together good all the time. I mean, they seem to be like they have a great relationship.
She marries Tim Daly, that kind of goes away. She starts a relationship with David Rashi, that kind of goes.
From Succession, who is the best? I love this TV show he did called Sledgehammer.
Sledgehammer, baby,
so good.
His introduction in this movie was so
funny.
Oh my god,
so wild,
so funny. Where she's looking at a home with a real estate agent, and David Rashi is just taking a shower in the bathroom because he likes to test out showers. He wants to know if the shower is going to be good in a house. Smart.
That was the only thing I would just test when I got New York City apartments. I'd always run to the shower and test it out because you were going to be there. If you're renting, you got to have that good shower pressure.
Oh, yeah.
I immediately liked him, but I didn't understand why Burrell, the real estate agent, ran out. She not only abandoned...
She fell over.
She fell over.
It,
right?
Yeah, and then she ran out to her car. But she abandoned Kelly McGillis there. And like, why was she escaping?
Yeah. Unclear. Yeah. Unclear completely. But what I was going to say, what I understood was she just seemed to be kind of going through, moving forward through life. It was hard to track her emotional journey other than how it was being played out. I understood she was heartbroken when they divorced or whatever. She felt the strains of their marriage. Timothy Hutton is born into like an abusive household. He is like you said earlier, June, he's kind of a drifter. He's trying to figure it out. He wants to like his old parents give him a trumpet. So he decides he's going to become a musician. And
I want to get into all that musician stuff. Because
that shit's crazy. When he becomes a musician and is making an album in the studio I was like, how? This would cost tens of thousands of dollars.
First of all, he's terrible. All right. So the whole reincarnated Tim Hutton is dressed like a guy doing cosplay from Benny and June, Johnny Depp's character from Benny and June. It's like this hat and these fringes, and he's out there and he's terrible at music. Like they do the scene right after that really emotional scene that we just talked about with the parents and I'm dying. They almost like quick cut to another scene where he's like auditioning to play in a jazz club and is so comically bad that it makes me like question everything about this character.
He goes from getting a trumpet to recording an album in the course of like 2 years.
And
like,
then, and then is when that album comes out with the lead singer.
And it's a hit.
It's a giant hit. But it's such a hit that they're not even interviewing the lead singer. They're interviewing Tim Hutton, who seemingly isn't playing a goddamn thing on the album. He's just a producer. Like, and at that point in the 80s, you weren't just bringing on the producer. You would bring on Sheena Easton. I don't know who produced
Sheena
Easton's shit.
I really was confused by that. Because I was like, my biggest problem with the movie is... The minute you separate them back on Earth and you're like, okay, I'll give you, and Emmett is like, we could spend the rest of the episode just talking about Emmett, by the way.
Yeah.
Emmett's like, I'll give you 30 years to find each other.
Oh, I need to talk about
after
Emmett.
That, forget about it, right?
Well, you're going to die, I think, right?
I think.
He's gone.
But wait,
back. Yeah.
But didn't he say, like, this Emmett moment is interesting. He goes, I'm going to give you 20 years. And then he goes, and then they talk. He's like, I'll give you 25 years.
Yes.
I'll give you 30 years. And I was like, wait, there's not even a negotiation happening here. He just keeps on adding five years.
Yeah, I think Emmett's rooting for them.
Okay.
You know?
Emmett. Okay. But he didn't play it like, you know what? Let me give you some more time.
Right.
It seemed like he was forgetting his lines and he kept on referencing the wrong.
My God.
We need to break down Emmett just for a second.
Yeah.
Emmett is Emmett God?
No.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you can just look in the credits. Emmett is himself.
Himself. All right. First of all, just so you know, if you've not seen anything from this movie yet, Emmett is the closest that we have to being like the... He's not God, but he is
the godlike character of this. He is the person in charge of the heaven that they're in.
And he's basically... played by, and I know this is another deep cut, but like a teen in an 80s movie. I said he reminds me of Styles from Teen Wolf, the Michael J. Fox Teen Wolf. Like, he's like that level like young kid who has his hair slicked back
and talks like this. Hey, what's going on?
So it's a very incongruous voice to look thing. It's like, oh, he's so young. But I thought they missed the mark here because like either of a child... Like, you know, talking like, hey there, toots, you know, or have an old person. You know, this middle ground of making it a teen was so weird because he's smoking a cigarette all the time. Hey, you got to tell you this. You know, it's like, I didn't understand what they were going for. Like, why did he have the old man voice? And no one else had that affectation? Like, was he a young angel or an old angel who... ages in a different way? There are some questions I had. I mean, obviously he is himself.
Well, for sure. Yes. There's like a lot going on. There's also Emmett also smokes in heaven where nobody else. Heaven is like, you know, like a beautiful kind of like,
well, it's
gauzy,
anything you want it to.
Twinkly kind of whatever.
Another issue I had with this movie with heaven is whatever you want it to be. It could be anything. And whatever Kelly McGillis imagines is just a park.
Yes.
It's never more than a park. <It's> like, it can be anything. A simple park. A local simple park. But she also hasn't been to Earth. So for her imagination to be so small is also wild. And also to be compared with Tim Hutton, who's like, I want to get married to you. And they're like, what's marriage? And he's like, I don't even know. I think you say, do you? And I say, I do. I was like, what do you mean? You don't know what marriage is? You did live a long life on Earth. Like, you conceptually could understand what marriage. He had a hard time explaining marriage. Anyway, sorry.
Can I ask you a question? Because I just looked it up. Do you know who plays Emmett?
No.
No.
Do you want to guess?
I mean, I thought it was that kid. I thought it was a kid from Adventures in Babysitting, Jackie
Coogan.
It
is Timothy Hutton's wife at the time, Deborah Winger.
Wait, what?
Deborah Winger. Wait a second. You are right, Emmett. Jason, you are right because...
I'm going to be honest. Oh, my God, you are right. I thought earlier in the movie, initially, I thought Kelly McGillis was also playing Emmett. Because they seem to be related, but it's Deborah Winger.
Yes. Okay. This is amazing.
No, it is because Avril has a clip.
Take a listen to the clip.
Emmett Humbird, Mike, glad to meet you. You have any questions?
Oh, my God. It is Deborah Winger.
Anything you don't understand that you think you should?
Oh, my God.
Well, the shovel here. I mentioned the shovel twice.
Must mean something.
You know what?
Oh, my God.
Oh, no. That's entirely up to you.
Oh, my God.
You think I'll be taking this back with me?
Nah, probably not. Maybe the idea is in a shovel. Maybe it's some musical like a guitar or trumpet.
Ooh, trumpet.
Very few souls take a whole idea back. Most of the time, it's bits and pieces of an idea. Usually something that they've never seen or heard, but it's in the air. It's all around. That's what's great about the system, Mike.
Wow.
Now, what you choose to do with it once you get down there, that's up to you.
Okay.
That's a lot of explanation. That's more explanation than I remember.
I take back everything I've ever genius choice. And this is why I say this movie is one of, I take back everything I say.
So
this is insane.
Right now, but there was, it's so interesting.
I apologize.
There was something about Emmett where it was really confusing to watch. And now I'm understanding why. Like I couldn't.
Yeah.
You know, he was so old, but not, but so young, but there was something about him, and it was Deborah Winger is the answer.
It was, the answer is Deborah Winger. And doing also, a lot. Doing a way, lot. When you watch that, it's big.
It, and let's talk about this.
I'm stunned. Movie, I can barely speak. I have to be.
I'm really like, my mouth is agape because
I really
was like, this teen kid.
I was
going to
answer like Leo DiCaprio or that guy from, that guy who was in the Whale movie, Brad Renfro. I was going so many different places. Where I wasn't going.
Oh, that's so interesting. I thought
Deborah
Winger. Oh, okay.
Wow.
So initially I thought it was Kelly McGillis doing Emmett because they seemed to be brother and sister or something in the beginning.
Yeah.
And I was like, she's playing both. I was like, oh, that's interesting.
That didn't occur to me, Jason.
And then... And then as it went on, I was like, oh no, the Emmett is not, this is different. but that's why when it was Deborah Winger, I was blown away.
I am speechless right now too.
And that also keys you into why the voice is so like, why it feels like a put on is like this kind of like fast talking. She's clearly doing like this guy voice where she's like, don't worry about it, kid.
Well now this is all right, because my mind was blown like this, because I'm writing my notes down as I'm watching the movie. I'm like, all right, so this is the moment where Timothy Hutton meets that Rick Ocasek looking guy.
Yep.
And then I look, and it's fucking Rick Ocasek from Cars. And as I'm reeling from that, Rick Ocasek is in this movie. Then fucking Tom Petty is in this movie.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, what? Like Petty, like as like
an
underworld
or something?
Boss.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie has some nutso cameos.
I think Neil Young is in here as well somewhere.
What?
Is my understanding.
Wow.
I just saw in the credits. I did not clock him, but.
Well,
I clocked Rick Ocasek as well, and Tom Petty. There's a bunch of that kind of stuff going on. I didn't look up Alan Rudolph, who directed this, because I was like, oh, maybe he was like a music video guy or something at the time.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I was, because there's so much music stuff in here. I was like, oh, I don't know.
I feel like this is Timothy Hutton. I feel like it's Timothy Hutton going like,
oh,
come
maybe,
hang out with me.
There was also good needle drops, you know, like there was good music inside of the movie.
I mean,
he's
directed movies like Choose Me, Troubled in Mind, Aftergo, and The Modern. So nothing that's really there. That's big. It's written by the team who wrote Starman, Stand By Me, Cuffs, Cutthroat Island, Jungle to Jungle, and Mr. Brooks. All movies I want to cover on the show. But
I cannot move forward with this information.
Okay.
I am so stunned. So stunned.
Wait.
And when you played that clip, so Paul, you had a clip of her.
Well, okay, so here's the thing. I was running a little bit late today, so I didn't have Nate's research in front of me. And as soon as Jason went to go research it, I pulled up Nate Kiley, our great research assistant. I pulled up what he gave me, and then there I saw it as clear as day. And then I looked in.
Just take me through. So you're looking on the internet, and you just type in.
Well, so first I was going to say, who do you think played it? Because in my mind, I thought, you know, because the minute you guys started talking about it, like it was like a young actor, I was like, oh, I think that's wrong.
Okay.
Because I thought it was, like I said, first Kelly McGillis, and then I remembered, oh, I meant to Google this and didn't.
Okay.
So then I was let me Google
it
quick.
You're not as shocked as we are.
I'm not as shocked. But let me be clear. What is shocking is that it's Deborah Winger. That it's like, not just like
somebody. I can't tell you how obsessed I am with Deborah Winger. I love her so much.
But man alive.
I am stunned. I am stunned to my core. I'm shaken like a rattle.
Okay, wait. There's so much. There's so much I want to continue to like pick apart here. This Emmett.
Oh yeah.
This Emmett of it all is really.
Oh no, this is huge.
I mean, this is a big deal. A big deal that, because wow. Just taking it in. Just really.
We can't move on. We're stuck.
Honestly, I don't know how we get out of this.
It's in. It's also. Is this the era where Deborah Winger has disappeared or no?
No, I think this is. Or was this still?
I'm trying to remember the documentary. Like, is this what made her leave?
What, that no one got how great you.
Can you imagine Tim Hutton being like, babe? You gotta do this part in this movie. Wouldn't it be great?
Yeah, you're gonna be there anyway. You'll be with me on location.
Right? You this can
is a,
be
this
God.
This is a movie that everyone was like, this is going to be the next great love story. Like, I feel it in my bones that everyone was like, we are on to
what
something
year is
very
this?
Funny. Okay, so 87. I want to talk about the marketing. I don't know how to move away from Deborah Winger.
By the
but
way,
for, just for
Deborah
one
Winger,
second.
Right here, just so you know, 83 is Terms of Endearment. 82 oh, is wow. Officer and a Gentleman. Then we go to Legal Eagles in 86. And then she just basically makes like three movies that I haven't not heard of, really, called Everybody Wins, Betrayed, and The Sheltering Sky.
Sheltering Sky, I know.
Okay, yeah. This is prime. This is Legal
this is
Eagles.
Prime Winger.
Prime Winger.
Oh, I mean, like, she's on a run.
Yeah.
She is like widely regarded as one of the best actors of her generation. And then does
by the
this.
Way, she is. She I wonder, is. She made me believe that she was the kid from Adventures in Babysitting.
I wonder if there's a part in here where she was like, I'll do it, but make me unrecognizable and do not credit me.
Well, yeah. I mean, himself was such a bold credit across the front.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
The first credit.
Stunned.
The first credit was Emmett as himself. Stunned.
I mean, by the way, and there was a control of her body. That when Emmett is sitting in that chair like Emmett is about to perform a cabaret number, I was like, there was something really wonderful about that performance. I was like, this is really interesting because I think the goal was...
I want to go back and watch it now.
I think
again.
The goal was... to make something that didn't feel old or young, male or female. It felt very much like, I think, ideally, that's what you would want a representation of heaven to feel like. That there was nothing on it besides really just the souls, right? Like it feels similar, but it doesn't look like anything we know. They don't do that anywhere else. But that's
and
what
also,
made that character.
Didn't Emmett seem? I mean, of course, this is probably what Winger brought to the role. But didn't Emmett seem and appear like kind of angst-filled and like dissatisfied?
Yeah. Well, yeah,
heaven.
Smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
Kind of like,
never found. I
he's
felt like Emmett,
complaining and is like, I don't know. This everything's so crazy. Everybody
I
else.
I felt
is
that Emmett didn't
full
find.
Of bliss.
Like to me, that was my backstory that I made for Emmett because I do this all the time. I'll write longhand about my favorite characters and create their backstories.
Wow.
Journal.
Yes,
and my
Paul
movie
does
journal.
Have a movie journal.
I used to have a movie journal.
Just
and
like
I found
David
it to be
Kelly.
I found it to be cumbersome. Now I'm only on Letterboxd. but I will tell you this. When I was watching her, what I got from that performance, even though it was not communicated in dialogue, was Emmett also fell in love in heaven and was never able to reconnect with true love. Like, I feel like they were unable to make that. And because of that, Emmett is broken in heaven.
Okay.
That's what I saw. That, and that's why Emmett allowed Timothy Hutton to go back. And I guess Emmett's punishment in heaven was that Emmett couldn't smoke in heaven anymore because
of you. And I have to smoke now on earth all the time. You know, and it's like,
I didn't clock that.
When Emmett meets Timothy Hutton on the side of the road, he's like,
because
of you, I got to smoke here. Like, so Emmett comes down to earth for a smoke.
Yeah, I was like, and I guess that's the question is Emmett actually like meant to be? I think so. God, like the
or St. Peter.
Oh, you think, okay, maybe.
Because it seemed like St. Peter was a
gatekeeper. Yeah, I felt like he was a gatekeeper.
I see. Okay. So we don't get to see more. He is just more of
the accountant,
part of the
like keeping
yes,
it all
like
together.
Managerial.
The, yes.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
I would love it if someone said, "Can I talk to your manager, please?" Excuse me, Emmett. Can I talk to your manager?
How did this get made? How did this get made?
What I was curious about with this movie is the marketing, because it does feel, when you watch the movie, and it did emotionally really impact me, it feels like this, they are making a big love story, a generational yes. kind of giant love story that's going to, you know, span across centuries, really. And then you see the poster.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
It's really like it does. It looks like Look Who's Talking.
That's exactly what I was going to say as well.
In yes. the clouds with their privates covered by cloud parts.
But can and you throw it up, Paul, so we can yes. take a look real quick?
You it's, got it. Absolutely.
It is, because I agree with you, June. When I first pulled this movie up to watch it and saw the cover, I was like, oh, okay. I guess that we're watching another, exactly to your point, Look Who's Talking, baby focused something, yeah. you know, like, you know, this movie is going to be about babies.
Yes.
I mean,
trouble, you know.
This is 2 years before Look Who's Talking. So like, this is like, Look Who's Talking 1 comes out in 89.
Based on, see, I thought for sure, like, oh, they must have based it on the success of Look Who's Talking.
Let me talk about Raising Arizona.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Because Raising Arizona also is advertised the same exact way, which was like the baby is front and center in Raising Arizona.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So I don't know if they were just like, you know, that's 87.
What year did Ghost come out?
Let's see.
Because Ghost was the other movie that I was like, oh, is this another kind of
1990?
After this. Okay. Because I was like, oh, is this, because this, when it started to sink in that this was going to be a ghost-based love story, I was like, oh, is this a response? Is this like post-Ghost?
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, that's something that people want. Kind of like a magical realism kind of love story. But it's not.
Right.
But the shit in this movie that is not good is you want them to get together so badly, because they do a good job. Kelly McGillis and Tim Hutton do have good chemistry.
And
when they
got
fall
good
in
buns,
love in
by
heaven.
The way, we didn't talk about his buns. I mean, they are JCVD
buns.
He's got
good buns.
They put Timothy Hutton's buns on display. That when he goes to heaven for the first time, you're seeing buns in the 2001 room. Like
that's what I wrote too. Yeah. 2001. I was like, everybody believes that heaven or the afterlife is like a gigantic day room in like an English manor house.
And by the way, like, his life, I think, was supposed to be flashing before his eyes. And the only image that we see is him playing the piano as a little kid. That was it. He was a soldier. Yeah. He was in love. He had parents. And the only image is him just tinkling on the piano. And then it's like they ran out of money because they just have a shot on him like looking like, oh, ooh, ooh. But we don't see anything.
We don't learn anything about the process. But what it doesn't work for me is they do such a good job of conveying their love for each other in the beginning of the movie that the rest of the movie, they are separated until the last minute of the movie.
And that is so
unsatisfying for me, because I was like, I want these people to, it's enough already. I need them to find each other, because what this is feeling like all of Act Two felt super static. Like nothing was really happening. They were just kind of going about their lives. But I'm like, this movie is about them together. I don't necessarily need to see all of this in between. I want them to find each other. I wanted them to find. I just wanted the story to be. I was waiting
but
too
I
long.
Also, you know, it was a long. I understand, and it was a long burn to get there. But I was also really feeling like they needed to meet each other at the right moment, and they needed to evolve to a place where they could meet each other.
Yes,
because like Timothy Hutton was, I mean, there was a great line in there where Emmett says, you can go back to Earth, but there's no chance you'll be in heaven again. Now, Timothy Hutton's character was a little bit hard to understand because he did win the Purple Heart. So he seemed to be a very heroic guy, but he also seemed to be a terrible alcoholic. They never really addressed his drinking, but I guess the question is, who are they? Are they the souls, or are they the product of the life lived? Going back to my last question, who are we? Are we a product of the life?
Wait, what do you mean?
Like, well, I guess what I'm saying is these two souls meet, right?
Yeah.
And they know each other.
At the end, you mean. At the beginning in heaven.
Well, at the end. But they meet and they see each other, and they've known each other their whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're saying, June, and I think this is what the movie is saying, is like they needed to get to where they are in their lives before that could happen.
Well, we've seen them almost meet numerous times. So they have like four or five right. missed connections.
Yeah. Right.
You know, where they're in the same space together. They're in the same, they pass each other on the street, or there's throughout their lives, they pass by each other or share space together, but they do not meet, which I really enjoyed. Like, I enjoyed the
more
what
of
if
that. Yeah, I
and
love
the
that.
Tension created by that. And
Ellen
keep
Barkin
having,
is given.
Ooh, Ellen Barkin, I was just going to say.
So good.
Ellen Barkin, this
so
sequence.
So good as like a femme fatale kind of yes. great character.
Gosh, she's
but
so
also
beautiful.
Like super comedic. Like, so this is this weird section of the movie where it's Rick Ocasek, Ellen Barkin, and like
Tom
you said,
Petty.
And Tom Petty playing a character called Mr. Stanky, which again, it just feels like these are all people having fun time. Like, my name is Mr. Stanky. But I want to have a whole movie about Ellen Barkin's character, where she is, because she's clearly like a goof, but also dangerous with a gun.
Oh, yeah.
I loved when Ellen Barkin got her cigarette caught up in her like veil or whatever she was wearing.
Yes.
It was just like hilarious. She's just so good.
When she yes. ate the strawberry and hated it and was like, ugh, and started to spit it out.
And was on screen for, I'm going to say, 6 minutes.
Yep.
And made a meal out of it. She's incredibly memorable in this movie and is like really just essentially 1.5 scenes.
Yeah.
Really good. I thought she was, like, that's the thing is, like, it feels very vignette and episodic as it's going on. As we're watching them, we know they have 30 years to meet each other, and we're watching them go through the beats of their lives. We're watching them almost meet over and over and over again. And, you know, some of them are good. Some of their life experiences are great, like him seeing his birth parents. And some of them, for me, were just kind of like, okay, like, kind of boring.
Well,
you know, and that's where the movie lost me in those moments, because I was like, oh, I've lost track of the thread that I want to be. I want to know that they're, I want that chemistry back. And they just kept not giving it to me.
I have two quick questions here. Did you all remember this movie? God, what was it called? I feel like it was like Cybill Shepherd and Robert Downey Jr., where Robert Downey Jr. came back from heaven too. Was this like a time in cinema where people were just like going, because it's like there's Heaven Can Wait.
I don't
okay,
remember
chances
that,
are,
but okay.
It's all right. So
oh, okay.
Cybill Shepherd, Robert Downey Jr. and Ryan O'Neal and Mary Stuart Masterson. And that one is about it says a reincarnated man returns 23 years later to his wife, her daughter, and his former best friend. Then there's another movie with Robert Downey Jr. called Heart and Souls, where he also comes back from the dead, where it's like, yeah, he just, I don't know, he keeps on coming back.
Well, is
I don't,
that
yeah.
the period of time when, like, people became obsessed with angels and, like,
right.
like what was the Roma Downey show? Touched by an Angel was on TV, and, like, the Michael Landon angel, Highway to Heaven. Like, there was a period in the 80s where kind of religious stuff was, an angel and afterlife stuff was, like, very much in the zeitgeist. So maybe all of these movies are, and inclusive
by the way,
of
Highway to Heaven came out, okay, in 84. Yeah, so that's a perfect timing there. I guess you're right. Yeah, I guess maybe this is like, we are just obsessed with like not wanting to die and come back and feel good.
I will say I wanted the final meet to be better.
Yeah, it was sort of like.
It was so busy and there was so much going on the street and there was so much happening that it wasn't a good enough, like.
But they danced. They finally danced.
I agree with you, Jason.
That I liked. Yeah. I liked that they finally danced. But the seeing each other. Like, I wanted them to be like across the street from each other and lock eyes or something.
Yes, yes.
But they were side by side.
Well,
which
how do
was
you
weird.
Shoot that? Yeah.
You know?
I understand, but I did like that she was the one who stopped first, because she actually wasn't looking for a soulmate. Necessarily, you know, and so he really was, though, and was very public about.
Oh, right. There's some girl out there
looking
for me. Yeah.
For someone. Yeah. Yeah. And
well, he wrote that song called We Never Danced, which is the line she says to him before she disappears.
But
yet
she wrote a book about her imaginary friend who is him. So like
that was a funny scene when she, the little girl, said this was also an SNL sketch a couple of weeks ago. Where she, as a little girl, says, well, my imaginary friend Mike told me. He's right over there. And, like, her parents, you know, are like, oh, that's, oh, Mike, it's nice to meet you, Mike. Okay, good. Pleasure to have you, Mike. Blah, 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 blah. But I, in that moment, was like, Wait, does she mean, she means Mike, her boyfriend from heaven, but does that mean that Timothy Hutton's character is there talking to her, or is that, is this a Drop Dead Fred scenario, or is that like an angel?
I think
is,
I couldn't ghosts. Figure that out. Kids see ghosts. I think that that's the idea. Kid Cudi
said
like,
it. But he wasn't if a ghost at that
but
point.
But he wasn't there as a ghost, but was he?
No, I think it was like, I think that she, when you're that young, you may have connections to the other world. Like her, like, and it, as she gets older, that closes up, but yet she kept it alive.
Okay. Like, yeah, that's
fine. I think there's
an
element
to that.
Well, that's
what she wrote the book about, because the book is about Mike and all that, her imaginary friend or all this stuff. And so they are kind of, and he writes the song. And so like, they're still obviously, their lives are informed by their connection to each other. They just don't know. They just don't know it.
They know how, right.
You know, they just don't know that that's what's happening there. You know, that their inspiration is because of the other person.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and by the way, we're going to get into second opinions. I just want to bring up one final thought here, which is simply
this. the band named Poodles in Bondage.
I wrote that down. I could go into that. because it seemed weird that Poodles in Bondage were auditioning at a jazz club. But I will say this. The thing that got me the most was Kelly McGillis's dad's lawyer on Earth when she's reincarnated. The lawyer leans in like he's about to kiss her. He's like, look, there's
and
two
they're like,
ways.
At, are they at the funeral? Like, they're it at seems the funeral. Like the father has just died.
By the way, the father looks great on his deathbed. He doesn't look... Like I, the
whatever
fact that they even
took
knew
him,
he was,
however he passed, he seemed like a great guy. And however he passed is how I want to go, because he had like a tiny pain while they were walking away from the beach or wherever they were. And the next thing we knew, he was peacefully at rest.
Well, he says something like, "Oh, all the people are here," or "Everyone's here." He says something. He says some wonderful sentiment of like, "All the people are here," something like that. And then he passes. And I was like, "That's great."
And then the lawyer puts his arm around, or like on the back of this chair that he's sitting way too close to Kelly McGillis for, and he's like, "Look, you could take over the company. It could be a huge success, or it could be a complete and utter failure. I'm just giving you all the sides." I'm like all the sides? Yeah. Like, yeah, it could go one way or it could go the other way. Like, I'm just giving you all the sides. I did not like that.
Let me ask you a question. Would you have liked this movie more if their active choices had brought them closer and closer together? Like, if she sold her toy company and opened a record company.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, if their life choices are what brought them closer to each other rather than just
happenstance.
Pure happenstance, true, like, random moment versus I'm making choices in my life that inevitably will lead to some... I might have liked that more because I might have been able to see it and feel like the excitement of them getting closer and closer, or it might have been bad.
Do you think that she would have, you know, fallen in love with him at the end if he hadn't been a successful musician, if he had been a grifter?
I don't think that she knows anything about him. I think that it's just the souls meeting. That's it.
Yeah, like, when they make eye contact and they have that moment, she doesn't know who that is at all.
I don't think she's like watching local morning
news.
All
they do is, I think in that moment, what the movie tells us is they remember their past, because the minute they make eye contact on the street, it cuts to like heaven's, like their past in heaven.
And he
so
also
I feel like
disappears
that's when they
for
remember.
A second. Yeah. I mean, that disappearing thing, when she disappears for a moment at the wedding and then comes back in, it's like, what just happened there? Was that conception? I don't know. Not to open this up again, but when he also disappears.
No, that is some sort of sign that she's going to fade and be sent back down
okay,
to
so
Earth
the cell
soon.
Signal is losing, yeah. And I don't know why he had to tell her. But
at the end, when they see each other, right? And like they have that moment where it's like, finally they found love. Then it fades to Tim Hutton talking to Emmett. And I was like, oh no, did Tim Hutton just die?
That's what I thought too. And I thought that would be the best.
Did he die in that moment?
I thought that would have been a great ending of the movie. Like, he didn't do it in time.
I thought that's what it was, but
yeah.
Or he got hit by a car. Or something like that. You know, I was like, wait, what happened here?
Obviously we have opinions about this movie. June, you share the opinions of many of the people here on Amazon with their 5-star reviews. It's now time for second opinions. Thank you, a little classic second opinions theme. Boy, oh boy, here they are. Second opinions, all culled from Amazon. There are 1,181 total reviews. That's a lot for a movie of this time. 81% are five-star reviews. 81%. And these are wild. This is, again, our buddy Nate Kiley finding some of the best of the best. There's two in here that I can't read because they're too depressing. But if you want to go down that rabbit hole yourself, Alfredo D. writes this. This is the kind of movie that leaves you to wonder, what if this was true? Recommend this to the open-minded, five stars. And then Here and Now writes, must pay attention to details to fully appreciate the movie. If you're not paying attention, you will miss the nuances and the movie will appear to drag. Five stars. Well, that's a
the movie will appear to drag, but it's not.
It's not. Maybe that's what happened to you, Jason.
Maybe I just didn't appreciate
the
nuances.
To the details.
I got to appreciate the nuances.
I will say also the nuances are not very subtle. It's like they whenever there is like a callback, they literally just flat. It's like, oh yeah, the guy who was running the computer factory is now the record label guy. Anyway, Natasha Chers.
Oh, I didn't make that connection.
You didn't.
No,
wait,
I didn't notice
either.
That.
Yeah.
The guy
Jason, we weren't paying attention to details.
Oh, wow. Then you weren't paying attention to the nuances. Yeah, the record company label guy was the guy who was with all those kids in the computer room. He was reincarnated.
Okay.
The head of Halo Records?
Halo Records. There it is.
Of course. I did think he had an introduction that I didn't understand. The camera stayed on him for a bit. Okay.
Diana McManus writes, this movie is about good storytelling. I don't think that that's what this movie is about. Not about good storytelling. It could be a good story. The young man who died in the story failed to find love on Earth, but later found it in heaven. Then he has a chance to write his true love on Earth. That was perfect for him. Five stars. That was a book review that like my son would write. Like that is like that. And then this is the one that I like the most because it's the most. This one just makes me laugh. Jill Richardson writes, Made in Heaven is a wonderful movie that depicts many features of the spirit world correctly. Five stars.
How do you know?
They know.
Show us
correct.
How you know. Prove it.
It is correct. This movie is coming correct. All right, people, would you recommend watching this movie? I'm going to just jump in and say absolutely. I think this is a really interesting movie because it's a lot of big ideas. I think there is some really, I like a romance. I'll cry during it. I was constantly going like, wait, what? I rewound this movie multiple times as if I missed something. So I highly recommend a watch. And it's on Amazon Prime. So if you got that, it's there. Or no, maybe you have to rent it. So
you do have to rent it.
You have to rent it, but it's like it's one of the $1.99 rentals. It's not like you're not spending a lot of money. It's pretty cheap. I would say watch it. Yeah. You know, I mean, my problem was that it kind of got too slow and because I thought that I liked their chemistry together, I just wanted more of them and we didn't get it. It's a fine movie. I didn't love it as much, but I think we all cried, you know, as a single person, it definitely is it really rattled me. I was like, oh boy, this is not good. Like I got to 30. I didn't find my person.
Well, no, that's just Tim Hutchinson.
Deborah Winger is going to come and collect me.
No.
I gotta go, baby.
You could have a whole different.
What does this mean for me?
You could have a whole different.
Does this mean Emmett? Does this mean I'm going to hell? I don't know.
No,
I didn't find my Kelly McGillis.
That age was arbitrary.
That was just like that was Emmett's deal with the devil or God
and
or whoever.
Who knows, Jason? You might be a new soul.
Maybe I'm a new soul.
I think you might be, actually. I know it's definitely not my first go round, but if you're a new soul, I don't think you have those same time constraints.
Yeah, maybe I'm a brand new soul.
I do want to play them talking about souls fucking.
I'm a new soul. I haven't been to Earth.
You haven't?
Uh-uh.
You mean your parents, they did it here?
At least twice. I have a brother.
Have you ever made love?
Yes. Have you?
No. Would you make love to me?
Yes.
I'm glad you died.
So am I.
June, what do you think? Would you recommend it?
Yeah, I would. I mean, it is a very weird experience watching this movie. And it hit me in a time and a place, and it really, I found it to be really overwhelming.
Babe, you were crying so much that there were tears in the frames of your glasses.
Yeah.
Like the tears were shooting out. Like, I had to take your glasses off to make sure that, like, it was you. It wasn't like you were fogging them up.
They were for the day. Like, wrecked. I have a whole schedule of things I need to go to, like, in the next few minutes and get done.
I did not. I've never seen you. I haven't seen you like that in a long time.
Do I scrap it all, like, and get into bed? Oh, yeah. From this movie. Man. Because it really brought up a lot for me, and that I didn't know I was going to be facing on a Tuesday at 10, you know, to be honest. So sure. I just was ill-prepared. And I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was absolutely beautiful. As someone who believes in soulmates and believes that, you know, and I've had this experience with my children too, that sometimes they say things or do things and you see like your ancestors in them and you see generations of people you knew and all of that. That really hit me to my core and shook me, rattled me good for the day. So I am.
Both of us rattled by this movie for very different reasons.
But yeah, what can I say? It got me. I don't know if it's good or bad or whatever. It's insane. But it definitely had a giant emotional impact on me.
Which is testament to, like, I think, like, because the movie is bad. I want to be clear. The movie is bad. But the fact that, in construction. But the fact that it can have moved us all to tears.
Yes.
Is impressive. Like there's something here that is good.
Yes.
And a lot of it is the emotion that is behind it and the actor's ability to convey that emotion. Even inside of a movie that is structurally not healthy. It's working against the success of the emotional story, and yet it still wins. And that's real. You know, like I cried at the scene with the parents. Like, you know, like those beats land.
They really
and that's
do.
Impressive in a movie that also has scenes that are just real turkeys and duds, you know?
Agreed.
The movie had a $13 million budget. It made $4.5 million. Wow. So it was not a hit. The tagline was 12,000 babies will be born in the United States today. 2 will have already fallen in love. It's a tough tagline.
It's weird.
And
it's very weird.
Yeah. The top 3 movies of 87 are Beverly Hills Cop 2, Platoon, and Fatal Attraction. So this is this movie doesn't feel like it's fitting into that mold. This movie came in 124th of all the movies released, and it was beaten by Mannequin, The Running Man, Jaws the Revenge, Masters of the Universe, Over the Top, Superman 4, and it beat Prom Night 2 and The Garbage Pail Kids, all movies that we did here on the show.
Wow.
Thank you, Nate, for getting into all that.
What a year.
And thank you, Avril Halley, our producer, our movie-picking producer, who found this great treat of a film, and maybe we need to find some more Heaven and Angel movies, because I was along for this ride. I felt it was really great. And now, time for a very big announcement. How did this get made? Is coming back to live shows. That's right. We will be live and virtually live in December for our traditional Christmas shows. And you can see us in Los Angeles on December 15th. Tickets are now available. Hopefully they will still be up. If you want to make sure that you are the first to know about this, sign up for our mailing list, which is on our website at hdtgm.com. And we'll be doing a virtual show, which can never sell out. And that will be on December 10th. We'll have special guests. It'll be a Christmas movie. And you can find out all the information once again on hdtgm.com. That's it. Just go right there. That'll show you how to buy tickets, where it's at, answer all the questions that you have, what movies we're doing and everything like that. So we hope we see you live. And now, June, what do you want to talk about?
You know what? I wanted to tell everybody about my sister's company, The Montage Queen. And they are launching their virtually home for the holidays montages, which are so incredible.
They're great.
Paul
These are
and
amazing.
I did one last year. The Montage Queen creates a video starring your nearest and dearest that you can be viewed in person or over Zoom. They provide these holiday-themed prompts, and your guests film their answers. The Montage Queen then edits them all together. It's really beautifully done. And we had one that we did with our family last year and we all watched, and it was just
it's such a special thing to do over
the holidays. And How Did This Get Made listeners can get $25 off if they go to themontagequeen.com and use code, if they write holiday in the offer code field, they can get $25 off, and space is really limited. She only does so many. So head to themontagequeen.com to secure your spot.
Well, Gene, I thought you were actually going to talk about your movie that comes out next week, right? You have a big movie coming out next week. Oh my gosh, totally forgot about that. Yeah, that's what I was really setting you up for. That
I was like, oh yeah, you're right. I want to talk about the Montage Queen and their holiday stuff. So yes, on HBO Max, 8-Bit Christmas is coming out the day before Thanksgiving, and it stars me and Steve Zahn and Neil Patrick Harris, and it is just a really well done, lovely, funny Christmas movie. And if you love them,
are there any ghosts? Are there ghosts?
There are no ghosts. There are no spirits.
Good to know.
But it's really fun, and I think you all will really really enjoy it. I think it's a great Christmas movie.
I love it.
Nice.
Jason, what would you like to talk about?
I will plug both season one of Star Trek Prodigy, which is coming out right now on Paramount Plus.
Just picked up season two, by the way.
Just picked up to
Huge
season
hit.
Two. Great. It's an awesome show. Great Star Trek adventure show. And I told Paul, June, I've been watching Lower Decks and finally got to the episode where you play Paul's mom.
So
and
strange.
It is fantastic. Really funny episode. So if people aren't watching Star Trek Lower Decks, which is the show that Paul is on, that June is on an episode where she plays his mother, it is hilarious. Big Mouth Season 5 just came out.
Yes.
Check that out.
I'm just saying that if you've not checked it out yet, check out the Twitch channel that I do a bunch of shows on. We have a bunch of fun stuff coming up, especially as we head into the holidays. Some big, fun shows that I'm sure I'll ask Jason and June to be a part of as we raise some money for some good causes as we go into the holidays. And that's twitch.tv/friendzone. And don't worry if you don't know how to work Twitch. It's just like YouTube. Just go to twitch.tv/friendzone. And there you watch the whole thing. It's very, very easy. And I'll say one more thing, which is all of our TeePublic shirts are on sale for a big Black Friday sale. So if you're listening to this weekend, the weekend before Thanksgiving, we are leading up to a big giant sale. So keep your eyes open on all of our social media and you will see all of the best selling shirts all for sale. Thank you so much, Jason. Thank you so much, June. Thank you so much, Cody. Thank you so much, Devin. Thank you so much, Molly Reynolds. And our producer, Avril Halley, our researcher, Nate Kylie, the people who do all of our amazing artwork. I'm talking about the ghost of Craig T. Nelson. I'm talking about Kyle Waldron and our super QC editor. Make sure everything's on the up and up. July Diaz. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Please remember to rate and review us. Join us on the Discord to continue the conversation at discord.gg/hdtgm. If you want to hear the entire catalog of How Did This Get Made, you can listen to it commercial-free on Stitcher. And every Monday, we're releasing an old episode from our vault, so you'll see that popping up in your stream. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next week on the mini-episode. Give me a call about your life, your love, or this movie at 619-PAUL-ASK. That's 619-PAUL-ASK. And maybe Jason and I will continue our conversations about what we're watching, what we're doing in the choir, because we're still in the choir, in a way. We all are in the choir. We'll see you next time for a mini-episode. Bye for now.